Welcome back to episode 28, Fundamentally Sound Podcast. That guy hiccuping in the background is the one and only Ben Brust. Reeks from Barstool, as always, your two guys here. Ben, what's going on, man? You are hungover.
This is the worst two-day hangover of my life, and my voice is going to sound terrible.
You're 27. It's all downhill.
26 tomorrow.
I thought you were 27 tomorrow.
26 tomorrow. Stop trying to get me closer to 30 than I am.
So, all right, you still have a year before hangovers really kick in. Because once you hit 27 is when the hangovers kick in.
Well, this one is like – this one was Thursday Bears-Packers, Friday golf and then go out, and then Saturday – the Wisconsin-Northwestern football game, which at the tailgate before was an all-you-can-eat, all-you-can-drink, that turned into all-you-can-take shots of.
It doesn't matter. You're like, what you're experiencing now is 10 times less than what you'll experience next year.
A little bit of a peek into the future.
It is. At 27, like, I've heard this multiple places, too, and it's very, very true. At 27 is when it all goes downhill. Like, hangovers last an extra day. You just feel worse. You just become old at 27.
This sucks.
It's not fun. It's not fun at all.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's not fun. Just wait until you'll feel really old when you have like six beers and you wake up the next day like, I don't feel great. Like this is weird. It's not fun.
I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah, well, I love watching you
right now.
I love watching you squirm. It's fun.
Oh, you're just like looking at me and laughing. And
yeah, because we did a podcast after my bachelor party, didn't we? Where I was dead to the world.
Probably. I don't know. Not. I don't know. I can't imagine anything could feel as worse as this.
Hell, it gets worse. Just you wait.
By the way,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying, by the way, you just said it, episode 28. Yeah. 28 is the worst number of all time, like in the 20s.
No, 29 is so much worse.
Nope.
Oh, I think 29 is so much worse.
28 is so gross.
I mean, 29 is not good either, but 28 is not ideal. I'm going with DJ and Benga for today just because it's hilarious.
I don't know. I literally have been looking and I don't
There's no choosing. So it's
the best one I could come up with is maybe Jason Capono, just because it's a great name that I used in NBA Live and 2K growing up.
Yeah, Capono was a standard NBA Live player.
Just because, you know, he had the 3 number next to his name on the bottom. And you're that guy can shoot.
Yep, and you can play him like in the small ball in NBA. Like, because no one ever plays like a bunch of bigs in NBA Live or 2K, whatever you played growing up. You can play him at like the 4 and just shoot the hell out of the ball.
Oh, if your four couldn't shoot,
it wasn't
having a 4 out there.
Yeah, I think really like the Warriors didn't create small ball. NBA 2K or NBA Live growing up created small ball.
Kids created small
ball. Yeah, everyone now old enough
actually,
to not do it.
Our era that grew up trying to create the small ball for video games is now living it in real life.
That's what I mean. Like, we're now, like, everyone that played NBA Live is somewhere between the age of, like, 27 and 34.
Yeah, so I'm not going to follow things as quickly, so it took me, like, a little bit to piece that all together. That's what you were trying to say.
Yeah. So we have, we were going to start some previews last week, but obviously shit hit the fan last week, and we had to address that. We're going to get into preview starting tonight now. We're going to do ACC preview. Going to start with the ACC. To me, it's by far the best conference in college basketball this year heading into the season. I don't think it's that close with whoever, I think you can argue who's number two. But, I mean, do you agree the ACC is the best conference in basketball this year?
Yeah, I mean – with that realignment when the Big East teams left to come to the ACC, like that changed the game. Like there was too many perennial quote unquote powerhouses that left conferences. Even the addition of like a Louisville.
Well, Louisville's the biggest name out of everyone that came over.
No, I know. I'm just saying like you would never, like, growing up, I never would have pictured Louisville being in the ACC.
Right.
Next thing I know, like, I don't know what's next for conference realignments, but it's getting a little ridiculous. Like, even as I was looking through the Big Ten today, like, I'm still kind of trying to grasp 14 teams in there.
Yeah, it's just a weird number. That's why I love the Big 12 and Big East, just because you get the
Yeah, like, in ACC, how many teams are there? There's
16? No, yeah. 15. It's an odd number, I believe.
It's just, it's too many. Like, you don't get the home and homes like you should every year with those same teams. Because I think it takes away from it.
Yeah, it's 16. Because it was weird when Louisville did the postseason ban, and it was an odd number in the ACC tournament. That's what it was. But yeah, speaking of Louisville, we have my guy Mike Rutherford, who's at Card Chronicle on Twitter. He's the founder of CardChronicle.com. He's a college basketball editor at SB Nation. He's a co-host of Ramsey and Rutherford, which just started, I believe, today or last week. I have to double check with him. On 790 KRD in Louisville, and he is the author of a book that just came out called 100 Things All Louisville Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. So, I mean, it's perfect time to bring him on. Obviously, we talked a lot about Louisville last week. We're going to briefly mention it just because he's there. But this is going to be the ACC preview, and he's obviously an ACC guy with Louisville in there now. He's really knowledgeable, and, you know, we'll have plenty to talk about. We're gonna, you know, talk about the conference top to bottom, and we got some good questions, so we're looking forward to it. So,
yeah, we got great questions. Yeah. It's so crazy. Like, you know, we talk all the time, as we've mentioned, and thinking back to like 3 weeks ago, we're like, all right, what are we gonna talk about? Or 4 weeks, what are we gonna talk about? Now I'm like, all right, we got so many great questions from everybody, and then LaMelo Ball news drops literally right before we go on.
Yeah, we'll touch on that with Mike too, just because.
Yeah, I want to touch it all. I want to touch it all.
Yeah, so there it's definitely starting to become college basketball season. So, again, this is Mike Rutherford. He's all over the place, but you can find him on Twitter at Card Chronicle. All right, and as we mentioned, we got Mike Rutherford on. Mike, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Definitely appreciate you coming on. I mean, it's been a lot going on. We were just talking about it off air. You had your first new show with Ramsey and Rutherford on 790 KRD today. You got a book coming out. Not to mention you live in Louisville. So it's been a crazy 3 months for you or so?
3 months/3 years, yeah. Pretty much. It's like, not to mention also – Rick Pitino wrote the foreword to my book. So you got the radio show coming out, which it's obviously better when Louisville's doing really well. You got the book coming out, and then all of this, you know, the world just comes crashing down around me. It has been, I mean, I said it sort of in jest, but the last 3 years have been pretty intense. But the last week, I think just because people had finally come to terms with what had happened with the last scandal, they sort of felt like, hey, we're finally getting out from underneath this thing. The Pitino suspension is fine. If the banner goes, you know, whatever, we've come to terms with that too. And then this, you know, biggest college basketball as a whole scandal that we've seen in a long time, and Louisville's at the center of it, that breaks. It's been really difficult for people to cope with. I mean, this is a town where, you know, you are a diehard Louisville basketball fan if you are, before you're the age where you can have conscious memories. And nobody really remembers how it happens. You just kind of are born that way. And it's something that you look forward to every winter. And for this to have happened, to taint another season, what feels like the third straight season, it's just, I mean, it's all anybody can talk about. It's all anybody can think about. And the best word I can use to describe it is just, it's sad. Everybody's really sad here.
Let me ask you something real quick, though. So as someone who's been through so much the last 3 years, and dealing with all this, at what point do the fans get weary and maybe want to jump off the ship? Or is that just not an option for as big a diehards as many Louisville fans are?
I don't think it's an option. I mean, you hear a couple of rogue fans who will say, well, you know, I'm dropping everything. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Louisville is a professional sports city without a professional sports team. It's why, like, you know, when all of my buddies went to college, like I think I have one or two friends out of my diehard U of L basketball friends who actually went to U of L. You know, you leave, you go to different schools. I went to Dayton. A bunch of my other friends did too. And all the people up there were kind of like, you know, how could you still be a bigger Louisville fan than you are a Dayton fan? And I'm kind of like, this is our, you know, this is our pro sports team. You're from Chicago. You didn't become a Bengals fan because you moved close to Cincinnati. You're still a diehard Bears fan. That's the way it is here. I mean, you kind of, you take the good and you take the bad. I can tell you at the Louisville-Murray State football game last Saturday, they brought the basketball team out, I think, in the third quarter. It was easily the biggest ovation of the game. Standing ovation. Guys really got behind the team. They showed David Padgett up in his seat. He got a standing ovation. It's just kind of, you know, it's not one of those deals where you jump ship regardless of how bad things are. It's just kind of ingrained in you that this is who you are. This is who you cheer for better or worse.
You mentioned David Padgett, and that's something that the hire made sense, or the promotion. I guess it's not an official hire. It's an interim hire. You know, because the players were clamoring for him. He's known as being a clean one. You know, he didn't have his hands dirty, so to speak, with everything that was allegedly going on. But at the same time, you know, it looked like Louisville was cleaning house, kind of taking what we see a lot of these programs do throughout history. You know, when I was correlating it to was the Kentucky scandal in the late 80s where they got rid of Hagan and Sutton and just said, look, our hands are clean. And NCAA came out and said, yeah, you guys did what you're supposed to. What did you think it made sense just promoting Padgett because it's so close to the season? Or do you think they were going to go kind of outside of the coaching staff and try to bring in just somebody for the interim?
I think it made sense based on a number of extenuating circumstances. Like I get your viewpoint. I get the viewpoint of people on the outside and Louisville fans who say, look, if you're going to cut ties, if you're going to go do this clean slate deal, you got to go complete. You've got to have somebody who has no ties to Rick Pitino and the previous regime. Having said that, and I don't feel bad sharing this, I think a lot of people around here have heard the same story. I guess it was Wednesday or Thursday. The players had caught wind that Tom Crean was a legitimate candidate for that job, which I would have just, you talked about jumping ship. Like that would have been as close as I could possibly get to maybe like being like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. The players also felt the same way. They really didn't want to play for him. They got together. They had a players only meeting. They all signed a piece of paper saying, look, we're playing for David Padgett or we're not playing at all this year. Huh. And Dang Adele, to my knowledge, took it over to U of L's interim president, Greg Postal, and gave it to him, basically said, ball's in your court, man.
Right.
And so when the option is have no season, lose all that revenue, the KFC Yum Center is already in a weird financial place. When that's on the table, his hand was really forced. And I think at that point he said, you know, we got to do what we got to do here. The other thing is if you go outside at this point with this FBI deal continuing to unravel and with people saying, you know, more and more stuff's going to come out, who do you hire that you know beyond the shadow of a doubt is clean? If you're Louisville right now, you can't afford to have any sort of negative story from this point forward. And maybe Tom Crean is perfectly clean. Maybe Thad Matta is perfectly clean. Maybe they're not. You know, you just don't know. And so you might as well stick with the guy that your players are comfortable with and that your fan base loves, because he is a very beloved figure here.
Yeah, I don't know if perfectly clean is even a real term.
It's true.
It's starting to seem that way. The Tom Crean thing was something I actually put it out early in the morning because I was just like, well, he's not working. It kind of makes sense. He's dealt with sanctions before. And there was some immediate pushback. I know you pushed back right away and other Louisville fans. Is it because of the Marquette situation with him, or is it because it's Crean, or is it a combination of both? Why were Louisville fans just like, I'm out with Crean?
I think it's both those. First of all, Louisville fans hated Crean when he was at Marquette because right. He beat Louisville all the time. He hated Rick Pitino. He was kind of the only coach in CUSA who really stood up to him back in those days.
Right.
The big thing was, though, Louisville was playing here on senior night. I think it was the team that ended up going to the Final Four, and Ellis Miles tore his ACL. And Crean, in a really weird fit, like went over and started screaming about how he was faking. And everybody heard it. He was making a big fuss, like, let's get this game going. Let's get this game going. The kid's faking an injury. And he actually tore his ACL. Crean, to his credit, I think reached out to him a few weeks later and apologized. But that sort of started the bad blood between U of L and Crean. And then when he was at IU, Louisville fans just kind of thought he sucked. Like, that's basically, it wasn't anymore like, hate this guy. he's super weird. He's super kind of just awkward. And every time we play him, we beat him by 20. So that was the other thing. I will tell you, and you guys will love this, who Crane's, how this whole thing got started. Because U of O's interim president doesn't know anything about sports. He's not a sports guy. He just assumed they all be gone and he could focus on academics. He sees this as a big, just, you know, nuisance for him. Papa John was the big Tom Crane supporter in all of this. Really? None of the Don Schneider himself really pushed it. He and I think another booster were really backing Tom Crane. Why, I can't tell you, but that was how that whole thing kind of got started. And it really, as much as I wish I could deny it, it really had legs. It came really close to happening. If the players hadn't kind of put the kibosh on it, we might be talking about Louisville coach Tom Crane.
So it's obviously everything that we just said is, I mean, like you said, it's been a crazy, you know, week for Louisville. And we're in the season. Practice started. That said, like, Louisville's still a top 15 team, even if Brian Bowen doesn't play. Like, I think you can take him out of the equation, and they're still, the general consensus is a top 15 team. What kind of lingering effect do you think this week has on a team like that? You know, does it change expectations for what, you know, the city around, you know, the fan base around Louisville, the team? Obviously, they're going to be still confident because that's just how athletes are wired. Ben, as I'm sure you know that, but, you know, you change maybe they're top 10 with Bowen and now they're top 15 or top 10 with Bowen and Patino. Now they're top 15. What's the feel of expectations for the fan base there for a team that still should be really good and compete in the ACC?
Yeah, I think it's sort of all over the place, man. I think people are still kind of just trying to process what happened because, like you said, you know, when Donovan Mitchell declared, Louisville kind of went from a team people were talking about as potentially preseason number one, yeah, to a team people had like kind of between 10 and 15. And then when Bowen signed, it kind of bumped them back up to that between 5 and 10 range. And now you're kind of back to where you're thinking, well, hey, you know, these guys should be top 15 again, even with all that's happened. I don't know. I mean, we're talking about, for all his faults, for all the off-the-court stuff, for everything, still probably one of the best 5 to 10 coaches in college basketball history. I mean, I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
I said he might be number one just because he made Mahmood like a reasonable player.
I mean, yeah, stuff like that. Everything happened with Rick Pitino. And to just take him out of the equation, it's almost kind of belittling to say, well, you know, they like David Padgett, so they're going to be just as good. And the other thing is that people haven't really focused on enough, David Padgett's got no staff right now. Yeah. We're not exactly sure who's going to survive over there, whether it's assistants or whether it's support staff. I think we know pretty much beyond the shadow of a doubt the other two main assistants aren't going to be on the staff this year. Jordan Fair has been much rumored to be the coach number one in this whole equation. Kenny Johnson, there was some implication today from the interim president that he was also implicated. I don't know if he survives this. And you've got a couple other guys on that support staff who played at U of L and know a little bit about the game. But I was talking to a current D1 assistant, and he was saying, this was a couple days ago, it's sort of just like a slap in the face to our profession that people are saying, well, you could hire any former player who's just hanging around the streets of Louisville, and it's going to be a good moral support. You could bring in, you know, some guy who's never coached a day in his life, and this team's still going to be top 15, top 10. He was like, you've got to have a couple of guys on that staff who really, really know what they're doing. And right now they're like, you've got David who's going to be okay, but he's only been 1 year as a full-time assistant at U of L, and you really don't know who else is going to be on that staff. I mean, for that reason and for many, many others, I think you've got some U of L fans who are saying, look, this could still be a potential second weekend of the NCAA tournament team, and others who are saying, man, just anything positive that happens is sort of a boost. It's sort of just you know, we're expecting the worst and hoping for the best. Opinions right now are kind of all over the place. I feel like we'll know more after those first 2-3 weeks of the season because they get a couple decent tests early.
If you had to guess, how do you think Padgett fills out his staff? Because it's, like you mentioned, it's crazy. Like, it's in the season, and it's not like you can just pluck an assistant coach. All, you know, it's not like Hoosiers. You can't just go get the drunk guy that's a father of a kid and just be like, yeah, you're my assistant coach now.
Yeah, you now have to take over all of the scouting, right, all of the video. Like, it is not a easy gig. As much as we do know that being an assistant coach would be a pretty great job, it's tough.
I mean, you've got people, the names that have been thrown around here in the city are just, it just goes back to that whole assistance maybe not being respected enough here. Right. Like somebody was like, let's have Denny Crum out there. I'm like, God. Denny Crum, who's 80 and just had a stroke. I mean, guys, we're not trying to kill him here. I don't know what you're thinking. It'd be great for morale of the fan base, but probably not good for his health. We actually had David Paget on the radio show today, the first show back, and I asked him that very question. I was like, what's the procedure like now? Who are you looking at? And he basically said he couldn't talk about it because they've got to wait until they get an interim athletic director in place, which is supposed to happen tomorrow. And then he'll talk to the athletic director and they'll kind of go from there. I think that Logan Bauman, who was a former manager, he actually was played on the team that won the national title in 2013. He's been on their staff for, I think, 3 years. He graduated early and has been doing video work and other stuff on the staff for a few years. I think he'll probably be on the staff as an assistant. David's father is in town. He was a longtime high school coach. I don't think he'll join the staff officially. I do think he'll be helping out with some stuff.
Some sort of advisory role.
Yeah, exactly. There's been talk that a currently out of work former high school coach is also going to have a good chance to get added to the staff. The big rumor around here is that it's a former U of L player, Tony Williams, who most recently was the head coach at Doss High School here and made a couple runs to the Kentucky Sweet 16 tournament. I was hoping it'd be like Bobby Hurley or something like that, but that miracle not going to happen. But I think it's going to be a bunch of names kind of just thrown together. It's going to be kind of a grab bag staff.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, from an outsider's view, I think that's going to be the thing to watch is, I mean, we've all hit on it. Just you're throwing a staff together at the last second and going, all right, go coach a team that could potentially be a, you know, second weekend or further team this year. It's like, just, yeah, go have fun with that.
Yeah, you're going to have to rely, I think, heavily on the fact that you've got three pretty mature kids that are serving captains. I mean, Quentin Snyder's been, he got thrown into the fire right away when Chris Jones got kicked off the team his freshman year.
He's seen it all, too.
Yeah, he hit literally, I mean, more than he possibly should. If that kid doesn't get a standing O on his senior day, then nobody deserves one. But he led that team to the Elite Eight. They came within a free throw of making the Final Four. Anas Mahmood was on that team. You've got Deng Adel, who I think is a budding star. He's got to be their best player. And then Ray Spalding, who everybody's kind of waiting to blossom. So you've got NCAA tournament experience on this team. You kind of just have to rely on the kids. If anything good happens this year, it's going to be because they both stepped up their game and just had the maturity to handle this whole thing.
All right, last question about Louisville, and it's the I got to ask it. I went to Kentucky, obviously. I'd like to think I'm not the standard Kentucky fan.
Oh, you definitely are.
No, absolutely not. I think Mike knows what I'm talking about when I say the standard Kentucky fan.
I know what you're talking about, too.
How many Kentucky fans did you want to choke? How annoying were the Kentucky fans in the state?
Like a daily basis? Oh, my God. I mean, the best thing about Twitter that I've discovered in the last like 3 years is the mute button. Oh. So like when Matt Jones or somebody sends a tweet out and like I look at the responses sometimes, it's just a steady stream of like, you can't see this response because you've muted this person. You can't see this response because you've muted this person. And that helps a little bit too. I mean, but as far as wanting to strangle them, I mean, we had a couple call into the show today. It's a daily thing. I mean, you know how it is around here. Right. The only time I try not to let it get to me, but my best story, one of the two stories. My first death threat from a Kentucky fan came on AIM Instant Messenger.
Oh, so good. Please tell me you had a great away message.
I'm sure my away messages were fire. I guarantee it was hot. I did, speaking of Matt Jones, I used to do a radio show with him when I was in college. I co-hosted with him on when he was just getting started. He brought me in like on a Wednesday or a Thursday or something, and I don't even know what set this Kentucky fan off. I think I was ripping on Billy Gillespie or something. Yeah, well, I was right about that. I won. I came home and checked my AIM, and I had like this message. Some guy just found me on AIM and was like, I'm going to kill you and burn your family's house down or something like that. So I can tell my kids someday, like, Daddy's first death threat actually came on this thing called AIM that you've got no idea what it is.
Maybe you can still, like, correlate to, like, G-Chat. Maybe that'll still be around when you're
talking. Yeah, maybe. Like,
I'm surprised you still even have AIM.
It was like a... It was what, like 05, 06?
Yeah. So Gillespie got hired my junior year.
Oh, so we're going way back. Got it.
Gillespie got hired in 07.
This is before.
Oh, yeah, no. That was probably around the time I was having the conversations. Hey, what's up? NMU?
Yeah.
ERB.
And just You had your buddy list separated, like chicks, dudes.
Oh yeah. Oh, that question. So this is how terrible AIM was for us, and how big of a deal it was when I got to college. One of my friends had we found out Hakeem Warwick's AIM name.
Oh God.
And this is the year after they won it all, so he blocked the shot. He was still like a superstar, and my buddy thought it was so cool that he'd messaged Hakeem Warwick, and Hakeem Warwick responded that he printed out the conversation and put it on his freaking dorm room wall for everybody to see. He was so proud. He wanted the whole floor to see that he talked to Hakeem Warwick on AIM.
I miss AIM. Like, cause, me and Mike are pretty similar in age, and I mean that's what we grew up on. Like you heard the sound. Like I remember getting AOL as a Christmas gift. Like I wish AIM made a comeback. Like
that's it's fantastic.
Only thing I wish for.
We had JJ Redick's name too. It was great. I was like, oh, JJ's going to class just like me. It was fantastic.
Yeah, right. All right, so let's get in. You mentioned Redick. Let's get into the rest of the ACC. I think we're all in agreement. If not, I'd be surprised, and I'd be wanting to hear your reason why. This is by far the best conference in college basketball this year, heading into the season, correct?
I think so. I think it has to be.
Yeah. I don't think there's necessarily a close second. You can argue who's second. I just don't think there's a close second. Within the ACC.
Hang on. Let me stay there, Reeves, just because like we may not come back to it. So how much weight do you take into an effect like the Big Ten ACC challenge to that discussion? Do you think it's what plays a factor, or is it just kind of like, hey, it's one game, it's like the NCAA tournament, and doesn't show the overall body of work?
I take zero into it. Like, I don't
think – Of course you
– Mike. I don't like when
Mike,
people –
Mike, let me hear your thoughts.
I mean, who – like, what was the final count of the Big Ten ACC challenge last year? Does anybody remember?
Nope.
No idea. So maybe there's an answer.
I think the ACC, and I only remember this because I'm a Louisville fan, and I had to write the recap, but I think the ACC won by like three games or two games. It was a tie. But like I wouldn't have counted that like as a reason why the ACC was definitively better than the Big Ten. You get weird matchups. It's November or early December. Like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like you can't read too much into that.
Right. Like, they're on home. Like, I hate when people use, like, the NCAA tournament success defines a conference. And I'm like, okay, so is the SEC the best conference last year with three teams in the Elite Eight? No. Like, it's just – I think you can just kind of look at the entire – the way I like to look at it is how strong is, like, the middle of the group.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole thing swings by, like, what? Like, Nebraska versus Boston College.
Right.
And, like,
right.
You know, does Nebraska being better than Boston College on one night somehow mean that the Big Ten is equivalent to the ACC or you know, better than the ACC? It's the whole thing. It's a fun event. I like following it. I think people get really into it. It gives us better games than we would otherwise get, I think, in late November. But as far as being significant, I don't know. It just kind of is what it is.
So within the ACC, Duke right now is the heavy favorite heading into the season. Do you agree with that? And then if so, who do you think kind of comes in afterwards that can challenge Duke for the ACC regular season champion? And I know it's a little weird because it's the imbalanced schedule, which I despise, honestly. I wish everyone still played the round robin. But so with Duke's the heavy favorite, who do you think – do you agree with that? And then if so, who do you think that can contend to win an ACC title?
Yeah, I mean, I think Duke has to be the heavy favorite, probably even a heavier favorite today than they were a week ago. I mean, I think
considering what I think are the next two top teams were listed in that report.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think everybody would say, I think most people's power rankings had sort of tier one as Duke, Carolina, Louisville, and Miami in some varying order with Duke always on top. Now, you know, Miami, who knows what happens to them? Nobody's even really talking about the fact that Miami is under FBI investigation as well, but maybe that plays a role in them not kind of stepping up and taking that next step as a program. Louisville obviously dinged with the loss of Patino and Bowen and maybe some other stuff. But then you've got Duke and UNC. I mean, Duke is a clear on paper better team than North Carolina. They're clearly better on paper than everybody else in that conference. If Marvin Bagley is three-fourths as good as everybody says he is, then, I mean, this probably should be the national title favorite heading into the year because of what's happened with Arizona, too, now. But, yeah, I think to answer your question, clear-cut favorite in the ACC, no question.
So then how do you rank the tiers now? when looking at the ACC with everything that we know up to today on October 2nd at 8:30. Is Duke tier one by themselves now, would you say? And then tier two would be who?
I don't know if I can put – I guess Duke probably deserves to be tier one by themselves. Carolina, I think maybe still you could have a legit argument, especially based on what they've done the last couple years. I mean, Roy Williams has dominated the ACC's regular season far more thoroughly than anybody gives him credit for. He's been way better in conference play.
I'm so guilty of that. I'm not a huge Roy Williams fan. I mean, it's hard to argue his last couple years. But I did a blog on the top 10 programs over the last, 10 years or whatever, and I counted up regular season and conference titles. Like, Duke's only won the ACC regular season once or twice in the tournament once or twice. Carolina has, six ACC regular season titles.
Yeah, I think since Williams got there, it's six or seven, and then Duke's only got, I think, two or three, and that's shared or outright. So,
right.
You know, they tend to kind of take care of their own business in league play. So I might be I'd be hesitant to put them, a full tier below Duke.
Man,
I might go
– so much higher than them than me this year.
Yeah, I am. I would have been way higher than if Tony Bradley had stayed. I'd be talking about them as a top five team. I still am going to go – I'll say Duke and Carolina are in a tier above everybody else. I'll put Miami because they don't seem to have been really dinged that much, at least yet. As far – it's just kind of a perception deal at this point.
Yep.
Who knows if that changes. I put Miami right there. I definitely would have Notre Dame in that second tier. I probably still, at least for right now, keep Louisville there. I would agree with that.
I'm more confident putting Louisville there than Carolina, honestly.
Really? Yep. All right.
Well, I'm just – because with Carolina, the two things with Roy Williams, you have to have the point guard that knows how to push the tempo and then run the secondary break, which he obviously has in Joel Berry. But when I was doing their preview – since 2002, since KenPom became a thing, he's ranked in the top 27 in offensive rebounding percentage every year but one. So all he does is get bigs that just rebound every miss, and they get – I want to do a true number to find out how many extra points they get just on offensive rebounds. They're not going to – they can't do that this year.
No, that's totally a fair point, and I totally agree with you. I mean, that's kind of been, the formula for deep runs for a lot of teams in the NCAA tournament. I mean, your boys at UK in 2014, everybody talked about the tweak, John Calipari. The tweak was basically let the Harrison twins put their heads down, barrel into the lane, throw up a wild shot at the goal. Maybe they get a foul call. Maybe it goes in. If it doesn't,
one of your
big giant dudes is going to grab the ball and put it right back in.
Yep.
And that's how they ended up going to the national title game. So, no, I think that's totally a fair point. Because that's what UNC's done the last couple years. They have dominated the offensive glass.
Like, when's the last time we've seen Roy Williams go small?
Very, very, very good question. Maybe I'm putting too much faith into both Williams and having a senior guard and having Theo Pinson back. I don't know. I think that maybe I'm taking a believe it when I see it mentality as far as them kind of falling off completely. But to I'm comfortable with that as tier two.
Okay.
I might bump VT up because I think that they're going to be really good with Buzz Williams, and they've got all five starters back. He's a lunatic to drive that point home. Virginia Tech loses its top two scorers from last year, but returns all five starters because he didn't start their two leading scorers last year.
That's right. Seth Allen didn't start.
And Zach LaDay. Neither one of them started.
Yeah, that's insane. He's insane. He's absolutely insane.
What about, see, for me, a believe it until it's happening thing for me would be, why would Virginia not be a part of that second tier then?
Totally. Well, as a Louisville fan who has, felt Virginia's torture firsthand for the past what feels like 7 years, but is really...
They also have tortured themselves in their own way, if you know what I mean.
And all of us. I mean, really, if we're being honest.
Games in the 30s can you watch?
Who wants to watch Virginia basketball? I mean, it's like, it's
who
like
wants to play against Virginia basketball, Ben.
The Wisconsin Virginia game at Virginia, I think we won 44-38. Was awesome.
Can I tell you, so to further drive home the point of how old I am, my favorite Ben Bruss story, I drove up because I had to work the night before. I drove up to South Bend the day of the Louisville Notre Dame game that went to the five overtimes.
Yeah.
All my friends had gone up there. We tried to do like a big road game weekend once a year. So I just got into this big sports bar when Ben hit the half court shot against Michigan. And to drive home, like the fact that like Louisville fans are way more into anything than Notre Dame fans when it comes to basketball, three tables erupted when the shot went in. It was the only three tables with Louisville fans at this place. Notre Dame fans were studying or doing whatever it was, but we all just kind of looked around and we're like, all right.
They're all
like,
watching Rudy.
You know, who cares here?
Shout out to you and your Louisville people then.
Don't worry, Mike. You guys just knocked up. Shot.
You guys just knocked up on my rankings a good two positions this year.
Well, it was the only good thing that happened to us that night. The rest of the buzzer beaters weren't as cool.
I still remember watching that game. That game, not your shot, Ben, but I remember the five overtime game.
Oh, I don't. I was wasted.
But all right, you mentioned Notre Dame, and you wrote that was part of the SB Nation top 25 blog or top 25 rundown, where you wrote a longer piece about Notre Dame, about how they're consistently underrated and how they've. To correlate with Ben, they've kind of become the Wisconsin of the ACC, where you can just start penciling them in to be top four at the end of the year. What is it about this team that makes you feel confident in saying they're tier two, they're top four, however you want to label them in the ACC?
I think you have virtually a guaranteed double-double every night in Bonzi Colson. I mean, he's the only one of the 15 All-Americans from last year who's coming back to college basketball. And I know,
Ethan Happ too, right?
Was he first, second, or third?
I thought he was
an All-American.
Okay. So number two, I take that back. But still, Bonzi Colson doesn't translate to be a great pro. He's the standard Notre Dame player who just kind of comes out of nowhere as a sophomore or junior and starts putting up 18 and 11 every night. He's going to be one of the most consistent players, if not the most consistent player in the ACC. I think Matt Farrell, too, is vastly underrated as a college player. When Demetrius Jackson left last year, everybody talked about this gigantic fallback at point guard. Who's going to run the show? Can you run the Mike Bray offense? And we had Rick Pitino on the radio show, and he was like, I think as a college player, the kid they've got in now is actually better than Demetrius Jackson. And he was tremendous last year. He was tremendous. You need at least one guy to step up and fill V.J. Beachum's shoes. They always seem to find that guy, whether it's Rex Pfluger or somebody else. You're going to have that versatile wing who just kind of kills you in a really weird and annoying way if you're an opposing fan. They just, they always have somebody who comes out of nowhere in the third year in the program and puts up all ACC-type numbers. There's no reason to assume why that won't happen again.
Yeah, it almost feels like Temple Gibbs is going to be that guy this year, doesn't it? Like, you mentioned how Notre Dame always has a guy, like sophomore or junior, that makes a jump. I feel like it's always a guard. Like, it started with Jerrion Grant, went to Demetrius Jackson, Matt Farrell last year. It's got to be Temple Gibbs this year, right? Or is it just too obvious?
Temple Gibbs is a very, very solid choice. So you see it as that. Like, I always thought it was somebody who looked exactly like Luke Herangode, who ended up becoming Luke Herangode. Jack Cooley was that way. Garrick Sherman was that way. Like, and Bonzi Colson did it against Louisville too. His freshman year, he hadn't played at all. He comes out of nowhere when one of those five interchangeable guys got into foul trouble, and he scored like 12 straight points. It was the five overtime game. I feel like maybe, I guess that would have been too long. But they always have some weird undersized power forward who just, as a junior or sophomore, starts killing people. But the guard position's kind of the same way too. They're basically the same team every year. They've just gotten over the hump in two of the last three seasons and made the second weekend of the tournament, and we're finally starting to give them their proper credit.
Do you think you mentioned the undersized guys that Notre Dame has? They have a legit big this year too. In Martin, I'm going to mispronounce the name, but it's Martins Gebin. Do you think he can kind of be that solidifying post player? I mean, he played really well for Lithuania at the U19s. He's not what you think of when you think of Notre Dame basketball, but do you think he can kind of be that unique back-to-the-basket type guy?
It's weird, and I didn't see the U19 stuff, so I can't speak on that. But I talked to some of their guys when I was writing their previews to make sure I was covering all my bases, and they're not very high on him. They're kind of like, he's a 12-minute guy, maybe 15-minute at most. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that he started for most of last year, and then they kind of realized that they were better when he was coming in and replacing Bonzi Colson than he was when he was playing with him.
Right.
And that's because despite Colson being, 6'5", 6'6", he's still Yeah, exactly. But the things that he does are kind of reminiscent of what a center does. And it's hard. He doesn't give a big guy the space to operate. And, you know, they don't have an elite rim protector. Maybe he can fill that void. But I was kind of surprised to hear that Notre Dame fans were so down on him. I guess because if you haven't showed it as a sophomore, junior, they just expect you're not going to ever.
Sure. Now, you mentioned who's team two and everything like that. Tier two. Who do you think's the team that overachieves in the ACC this year, like we saw like Wake Forest do last year? And who's a team that underachieves in the ACC this year?
I kind of like NC State, and maybe that's just because Gottfried's gone, and you could always pencil them in as a underachiever under Gottfried. Like that was just it was the biggest given of all time. It was like Georgetown losing to a double digit seed there for a while, but they've got They got a couple of the guys that you didn't expect them to get back in the fold.
Like
your seventh back, Malik Abdul-Abu. I can never get the names all together. They got LeVar Bats, who picked them over VCU, which was a big deal for them. I think Kevin Keats is the real deal. I don't know if he gets tied into this whole thing with Louisville, but UNC Wilmington, what he did was completely remarkable. They had been awful for I think 3 or 4 straight years where it wasn't just like kind of awful. It was, we're barely winning 1 or 2 games right in conference play. He wins a share of the conference title in year one. He takes them to the NCAA tournament the last 2 years. They gave Virginia all they could handle last year in round one. I think he's a really, really bright young college basketball mind. I think he can make them overachieve. And here's one more wild card that I feel this could look totally stupid because I was surprised that Clemson kept Brad Brownell because it feels like he sort of wasted the Jerron Blossom game era. But they still returned.
I don't think it feels he did.
Well, yeah, you're right. I should be more bold. He definitely did. There's no reason for them not to have gone to the tournament one of the last 2 years. But they do get 5 of their 7 leading scorers from last year back. I kind of like that roster a little bit. I think Shelton Mitchell's one of the most underrated guards in the conference. Like I can see them maybe not making the tournament, but maybe not finishing like between 12th and 15th, which is where most people are going to have them pegged heading into the year.
So they're just standard Clemson.
Standard,
eighth or ninth.
But in a year where people don't expect them to be standard Clemson. But I can see them going, 8-10, maybe.
I feel like that's just Clemson. Like you can say they're going to be fourth or they're going to be 12th, and they still just go 8-10, and they're playing in the noon 8-9 game against Miami.
They'll beat somebody in the top, like, 18. And then they'll lose to, like, Boston College, and that'll have all of their – they'll lose to Pitt twice or something if they play Pitt twice, and that'll remove all doubt about where they're going in March. Yeah, you're right. That's probably standard Clemson.
How bad is Syracuse this year? Are they the second worst team in the ACC?
Not the worst team in the ACC because Pitt's here. I don't know if they're going to have enough – but is Pitt going to have enough players to play is the big question. Yeah. We don't even know if that's going
to
happen.
I hope Stallings has to suit up for a game.
Kevin Stallings is going to have to take the same approach with players – as Louisville's going to have to take with assistant coaches. It's just like, is that kid who was like scored 13 points in that one high school game I saw, is he still hanging around town? Like, is he on campus? Do we even know where he goes to school?
He's just going to be going to whippy old games. Like, can somebody please from the JV team come play?
Exactly. Throw him out there. It just makes me even sadder that we didn't get Pitt head coach LaVance Fields, which should have happened hopefully will. I mean, that would be the best. LaVance Fields as head coach would be the best former player coaching a team this side of Marshall Henderson coaching Ole Miss. But they're going to be terrible. They're going to be real bad. Boston College is going to be bad. Jim Christian's going to get fired, I think. I can't believe he hasn't yet. Those two, I feel like you can just go ahead and pencil in.
Can Boston College ever be good? Because it seems like they should. Like I remember I wrote something of programs that should always be decent. I'm not saying national title contender year in and year out, but they just shouldn't suck. Like Illinois should never just suck.
Yeah.
And I threw Boston College in there somewhat hesitantly just because they are a little bit of a weird school. Are they ever going to be good? Like, what's it going to take for Boston College to be good?
It's so funny you say that because – so I went to the Louisville football game at Boston College last year, and I was kind of looking – the facilities are terrible there. It's awful. But everything around it is so pretty, and it's a big city. It's a good school. They've got history. And I asked a couple of the ADs who were up there at the time, what's the deal here? Why should this program be? And they didn't win a single game in football or basketball in conference play. Was it 2 years ago?
That's when they had the most depressing interview ever, where the kid said he just enjoyed going to Chipotle, or he's going to miss going to Chipotle.
Yeah, which that was the
that was epic.
That was the biggest I've turned on a quote. I read it and I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. I watched the video and I was like, that's the saddest thing I've ever
seen.
Like
the dude sitting there crying.
Oh, it was terrible. But so I asked, you know, how does this happen? Both these guys said the same thing, and it was that the ACC is a terrible fit for Boston College. The Big East was perfect for them. And they kind of expanded upon it saying, you know, the presidents don't like it, the administration, so they're not willing to put any funds into athletics. They feel like they can't recruit. They can't get out of this hole. And that's their response. I still feel like you said, like with Illinois and BC, they should never be like a Rutgers. They should be somewhere in the middle of the pack of their major conferences.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the other schools I threw out there was like Texas should just never suck because it's Texas and they have the money and the resources. And I think I threw out USC just because you don't have to recruit outside of like 10 miles.
Yeah. But back to the point, Boston College is going to suck. Jerome Robinson's good. They're terrible.
So Syracuse is maybe better than two teams for sure in the ACC this year?
I would say definitely better than two. I mean, do you kind of think – like I kind of get the feeling that this is – Syracuse, sans that miracle Final Four run a couple of years ago, has kind of been sliding towards the – like Jim Boeheim is sort of Denny Crum at the end of his Louisville tenure. They're just kind of losing it a little bit. And
they haven't
to me,
been good. Like they have they, not. They haven't, take the, no. Even take the Final Four year. Like I get in so many arguments about this, where I was like, if the last 4 years now of Syracuse basketball have been bad. Like they got hot for four games against, and they also got lucky. Like they played Middle Tennessee State in the round of 32. They caught Gonzaga in the Sweet 16, and then they. You know, I'll give them credit against Virginia. Like, they beat Virginia. Right. They made Virginia collapse. But, I mean, they got hot for four games. And it's not like that – I hate when fans will just look at the NCAA tournament and go, that's a successful season because it's the flukiest event in all of sports.
No, and I totally agree. And I wrote a big thing last year. Remember Syracuse had such that terrible start.
Yep.
And everybody looked at it as this gigantic – underachieving Final Four team, and I said, you know, we're looking at this the wrong way. We should be viewing this as a team that didn't deserve to make the NCAA tournament last year, playing to its ability rather than a Final Four team that's having this massive slide. But I mean, losing Torian Thompson for them to Seton Hall is huge. Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of was their last sort of hope. But Syracuse is the one quote unquote major program right now that I really, really wonder about their future once Boeheim does leave, because he's kind of been it. Like, how do you convince a five-star kid to go to Syracuse, New York?
Yeah, you can't, unless it's Jim Boeheim's son.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to me to see where that program goes once the Boeheim era comes to an end, which, if things keep going this way, could be sooner rather than later.
But not only that, what coach can they get up there? I mean, it's kind of been discussed with UConn, too. Like, once Ollie leaves, we've never seen UConn or Syracuse go through a true coaching search. And you're talking about Storrs, Connecticut, and Syracuse, New York. Not two, like, hot spots. Not two destinations. Syracuse, at least, has the ACC. UConn's in the, obviously, the American. But what kind of coaching do they – what kind of coach do they even get?
Well, and you're sort of seeing that with UConn now, because, I mean, UConn, even more so than Syracuse, was about one head coach. I mean, they were nothing before Calhoun got there.
Right.
He turned them into, I think, a national power. And now, I mean, Kevin Ollie, again, I know it's become this sort of college basketball cliche at this point, but if they lose that game to St. Joe's in the first round of 2014, which they were down three with, what, like 45 seconds left?
They were down a lot more than – they never should have won that game.
They shouldn't have. And if they don't, he's a coach who's won one NCAA tournament game since he got there. And where do you go from there? And, you know, I don't know how attractive the job is right now. They've recruited okay, but the big guys that they've landed have been sort of misses, four- or five-star guys who didn't deserve to be four- and five-star guys. I mean, you're right. Those two programs, their future for the next 10 to 15 years is very, very intriguing, I think.
Yes, I want to jump in now. Let's get to your predictions from – rankings of teams, player of the year, coach of the year, and then give us your first team All-ACC team.
Oh, man. If I'm ranking the teams, am I doing 1 through 15 here?
Yeah,
let's just go 1 through 8 unless you have it on hand.
1 through 8.
I can do it either way. I'll say Duke 1. I'll go Carolina 2. I'll go I'm sticking with Miami 3 because I think Notre Dame's schedule is actually harder this year. I'll go Notre Dame 4. I'll go Louisville 5. I'll go Virginia Tech 6. Virginia 7. And I know that seems kind of weird. Wake 8. I can keep going. I'll go NC State 9. Georgia Tech and my boy Josh Pastner. I saw you got a question about that. I want to talk about it. I'll throw them in there next. NC State, that was my surprise team. I got to stick with them. Clemson, FSU, I think takes a massive step backwards. And then our boys, BC at 14, Pitt at 15.
So we're pretty similar. I put out mine. I have Duke, Louisville, Miami, Carolina, Notre Dame, Tech, Virginia, Wake, Georgia Tech, Clemson, State, Florida State, Cuse, Boston College, Pitt. I think everyone kind of agrees at that in some order, but I think when you put it in tiers, I think everyone kind of agrees. Who's your player of the year?
Man. I don't want to say Bagley because I feel like we're putting too much on him. I also don't want to say Grayson Allen because why should I say anything about Grayson? I'll say Joel Berry. I'll go with him. And then if we want him.
Stole mine.
Well, okay. What's yours, Reeks?
I have Bruce Brown.
Okay.
I just think he's going to put up, especially if Lonnie Walker plays and is healthy, I think Brown puts up ridiculous numbers.
I like that. I've got him on my first team All-ACC, which we can get to now if y'all want to.
Same here, and I forgot Joel Berry, so I have to think of who I'm dropping.
I've got Joel Berry. I've got Bruce Brown. Yep. I've got Bonzi Colson. Yep. I've got Marvin Bagley.
Yep.
And I'm down to
I'm debating Lammers or Bryant Crawford.
I love Bryant Crawford. He should have gone to Louisville, and he kills us every year now too.
He's so good. He's really good.
He's fantastic. I also, man, Grayson's still out there too.
I have Grayson as my last one. Yeah.
I'm throwing Grayson on there too. I feel like Duke's so thoroughly that you have to have two.
If Duke is tier one, like we all think they are, and they do what they're supposed to do against the rest of the ACC, then you usually do have two guys from the top team in the first team all ACC.
Yeah, I mean it always ends up that way, and I always try to find a reason not to put two from the same team, but it's impossible not to.
If I had to throw one more out there, and this kind of guy, I love Kyle Guy at Virginia, even though he cut the man bun. I think they're going to ask him to score so much this year. I mean, like 12 points a game, so much for Virginia.
That's 40% of their offense.
I love that how much Tony Bennett hated playing him last year because he was like, this son of a bitch. Like, he doesn't want to play any defense. He doesn't want to run our system. But nobody else can score, so we kind of just have to throw him out there, let him do his thing, and I'm going to get pissed off every time he's on the defensive end. But I love Kyle Guy.
Man, that's I'm you talk about wait and see. That's sort of how I am with Virginia. Because, you know, when they've been good, they've had a guy like Joe Harris, Malcolm Brogdon, Justin Anderson that could just bail them out. Like, they could just go get their own bucket. I think Kyle Guy can do that, but I want to see him do it. Like, he didn't really have the chance to do it last year.
I hear you. And he's got nobody to set him up this year, or at least not.
Ty Jerome has to take the big step. They lose Darius Thompson.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, London Prentice. But... All right, Coach of the Year, who do you got?
Coach of the Year, I feel like they just go super generic and give it to Coach K because it's not going to be – I mean, who did we talk about that would have been a drastic overachiever if the standings end up falling that way? Nobody really.
Yeah, I just went with Mike Bray because I think, like, he should just win it.
Bray's won it.
I think
– Go ahead.
Go ahead. I think that if anyone – you know, Virginia Tech's made the tournament. They've been – you know, kind of scratching the getting to tier two-ish surface. So if they overachieve and hop into the top four of the ACC, I think you could maybe make an argument for Buzz.
Yeah, Buzz is a really good pick. That's who I would have had second if I thought they were going to finish top five, top six. He may win it anyway because they hate giving it to teams that are picked to win the conference before the year. I feel like didn't Bray win it like 2 years ago? Bray may have more Coach of the Year awards than any other coach in college basketball because they're so good in the regular season.
Yeah. Well, like
I feel like the Coach of the Year award is almost like the most improved player award just for coaching.
Well, K's never won AP Coach of the Year, which is ridiculous.
Well, the year that Kentucky went undefeated, Calipari didn't win AP Coach of the Year.
Bennett Tony won Bennett. It that year, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he did, which is just absurd. Right. But Bray and JT3 just dominated Coach of the Year in the Big East. They always won it, and their teams never made it to the Sweet 16.
No, not at all. All right, so, yeah, we got asked this question, and then I'm going to go into rapid-fire questions after this. But, all right, what's the story with Josh Pastner?
I don't hate Josh Pastner.
I love when you have to start a story that way.
I think he's adorable. I mean, it's more of a fascination than anything else at this point.
Careful with your words. Adorable might be a little too strong language for him.
Adorable. Yeah, I mean, I'm saying what I want. Me and Josh have that kind of relationship. So he was the coach at Memphis, and it's sort of unknown to, I think, most college basketball fans our age how hated rivals Louisville and Memphis were at one point. I mean, it was sort of before my time, too. It got ratcheted up a little bit when they were in CUSA and Calipari was there. But when Pastner came, there was a game where they beat Louisville in the 2014 on their home floor with that Russ Smith team that was so good. And he, like, started a shouting match with the fans, and it was really bizarre. And I think after that, kind of people didn't really like him that much and all this stuff. And I just kind of think he's a lovable dork. Like, there's that video of him.
Oh, he's a huge dork.
Have you seen the video? If you all haven't, go watch it right now. The video of his pregame speech to Memphis before they played the round of 32. And he's like, I've been to the Sweet 16 as a player. I've been there as a video coordinator. I'm like, how the hell are these kids going to get fired up by their head coach talking about his video coordinator Sweet 16 experience? But just that kind of stuff just cracks me up. And I think he's hilarious. He did a hell of a job last year at GT.
Yeah.
It's more of just a, like, he's easy to make fun of deal at this point.
Oh, with ease. I mean, what was it last year where the caller, like, somebody called his office and complained about how it was rude that fans were chanting airball at a kid, and he, like, went on air and apologized for it? Like, you don't do that stuff.
And it's so good that he was the head coach at Memphis, too. It was like Ned Flanders coaching, like, Miami football back in the early 90s. It was just – it's the most imperfect fit I can think of, which is amazing that it worked out as well as it did, which was not that well.
All right, two rapid-fire questions for you. Is DePaul back?
DePaul's back. They never left.
Back. All right, DePaul's back. You heard it first, Ben. DePaul's back.
Hire me,
DePaul. No way. No way.
I'm available for head coach.
That's a see it if I believe. That's a believe it when I see it type thing. But okay, I'll go with it.
No, when I say they're back, I mean they're finishing last in the Big East again. That's what I mean.
Maybe ninth. They might be better than Georgetown this year.
No, last. They're dead last.
They usually get like one home win versus a top 25 team each year, though.
Well, who did they beat? Was it Nova a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, they beat Nova.
And their players stormed the student section because there weren't enough students to storm the court.
If you had to be homeschooled by LeVar Ball, what class would you most want to take?
Branding? Is that a class in the LeVar Ball school?
Tell me, like, physics would not be perfect with him.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's actually the perfect answer. You had that planned out. But, like, yeah, the jump shot, the 30-footer is actually, like, a really high percentage shots. Yeah, statistics would also be a good one, too. He's like, you know,
would be great.
If you're 13 of 53, they say it's this percent, but actually it's good enough to get a D1 scholarship and to get your own shoe as a 16-year-old. Like, he would be – there's that episode of Family Guy where Peter Griffin, like, he gives them homeschool. Like, that's how I imagine LeVar Ball's homeschool going with poor LaMelo.
How crazy is this story? Like, it just happened, like, the news broke, like, 20 minutes before we started recording. So, it's like, it's still digesting. How crazy is this story?
It's not quite crazy enough to take full focus off Louisville. So, I need LeVar, like, to do one more thing. Like, I don't know, like say his, I don't even know. What I'm not going to go.
Start Big Baller Academy?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to launch his own D1 school, and he wants accreditation right now. That would be maybe enough to do it. But I love how, like, at the very beginning when it first breaks, we all still kind of try to give him the benefit of the doubt. We're like, he's trying to preserve LaMelo's NCAA eligibility. He's doing this for the kid. And then he comes out and he's like, no, man, I just don't like his high school coach. Like, we're taking him completely out of his school because I don't like his coach.
First year head coach, too, which is perfect.
Yeah, he's terrible. We know they haven't even probably started practice yet. It's October 2nd, but he's terrible. He's the worst.
Have you guys watched the Ball in the Family series?
It's actually not bad. It's not bad.
I honestly look forward to Sundays to watching. I absolutely love it.
It reminds
me. I am all in.
It reminds me of like good MTV reality shows from like a decade ago. I like it.
It's like the keeping the Kardashians for me.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot for coming on. Where can everyone find you and find yourself?
For Louisville stuff, cardchronicle.com is my website. On Twitter, it's at cardchronicle, all one word. Also, check out sbnation.com for our college hoops coverage. And, you know, wherever else. Anybody else who pays me, I'll write stuff for them. Feel free. Yeah, just let me know.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for coming on again, man.
No problem, guys. Big fan. Thank you all.
See ya.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, so that was our interview with Mike Rutherford, and I got to be honest, that was one of my favorite interviews. I've been talking to Mike for about the last year or so. Real good dude, real knowledgeable, obviously a ton of information with what's going on down there at Louisville. And I got to be honest, that whole situation with the players forcing their hand or forcing the interim president's hand saying, hey, we're playing for Padgett, or guess what? You're losing money this year.
Yeah, I was sitting here. I was like, what? Like, I didn't hear about this. Like, I was like, did I really miss that? Because that was huge to me. I couldn't even imagine being in that scenario first off. But no. I think we have to kind of, like, give props to the players in a way. I mean, maybe they unfairly judge Tom Crean, or there's that stigma that we talked about.
Yeah, I think it's a little unfair because he is the goofy guy.
Yeah, like they were like, oh, you know, like it's very easy to throw out that shtick at him, even though he's kind of recovering his image. Like, I even enjoyed, like, listening, like I said, to the PMT interview and seeing him on ESPN. He's doing a good job outside of – yeah, he's smart. You don't get the head coaching job at Marquette, Indiana, if you're not.
Right.
He can recruit to his in-game coaching. Yeah, we can pick on him and talk about his tantrums and how he runs up and down the sideline. But at the end of the day, he turned Indiana back
sanctions
somewhat
to a contender.
Yeah,
they were the number one overall seed. They were.
You can dog them all you want, but they weren't as relevant as they were during his tenure.
No, that's for sure. I mean, I completely agree with you there.
So props to the players to making that happen.
Yeah, you know what I think too is, and it's one thing that me and you have agreed with and kind of yelled about is, when you commit to a school, you're committing to a coach and to a playing style. All those players there are committed to a certain playing style under Pitino. This is the closest that they can stay to it.
Yeah, no, I also think that maybe they should put some freaking volunteer sheets out. Like, hey, anyone who can help, like send in resumes with basketball experience.
Should we go?
This is your chance.
Should we go do it?
This is they should literally be like, this is anyone's chance to throw in a resume, convince us why you should help us out. And who knows? Maybe it's the next like movie making story. You get someone who helps turn this keep the ship afloat and takes off from there.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to watch. I mean, it's coaching in college basketball is no joke. Like, it's why I kind of get upset when people are like, well, you know, Calipari and Kay just throw guys on the floor. It's like, no, not in college. Like, you actually have to coach in college basketball. It doesn't matter how talented those teams are, you still have to coach.
Yeah, there's something about Calipari that I really don't like him, but I will give him all the credit in the world. I was so impressed.
Same thing with Kay. Like, that's all
I was so impressed as a senior watching those freshmen play and the maturity level that they had for as young as they were.
And I think Sean Miller gets that same kind of rap too of just, well, all he does is get the best recruits and like doesn't really coach. And yeah, like he, and it didn't help like Sean Miller's case that he got just completely outcoached by Chris Mack in the Sweet 16 last year. But again, these guys, you know, all coaches in college basketball are putting these teams, you know, especially successful teams, there for a reason. And it's because they can coach. It's just different ways of doing it. Like, you know, it's, and I think that's where Crean kind of gets. And you were right. Like, it's fair to judge him on some of his in-game decisions. Like, you could argue that he cost Indiana a trip to the Final Four by the way he handled Syracuse's zone.
That was such a nasty game.
But he still got them to the number one overall seed and in the chance to at least fuck up an Elite Eight game.
No, I completely agree. And I think, you know, for Louisville, I fear for them. Even though, like we talked about, they have a lot of experience coming back, guys who have seen it all in terms of like sanctions and playing experience, you name it, they're going to be experienced level. But at the end of the day, they're still only 21 to 22 year old young men.
Yeah.
And
but they're playing against 18, 19 year olds, which who knows?
But again, it's tough to endure the constant criticism, the constant looking on to, the constant judgment. I'm intrigued by the storyline, and I'll be watching it closely.
What are, I guess, is there anything ACC-wise that we didn't touch on that you still have questions?
ACC-wise, I don't know. I like what you brought up about UNC. I'm interested to watch how they do without Tony Bradley coming back and not having that big time big man as they're used to having. Miami, I like that team, and I like Larinaga, but you could make an argument that Miami has underachieved, you know, the past 4 years in the ACC, where they've been top 25 teams, but have they made that next jump is all I'm getting at. They're still,
they made it with like the Larkin team where they were the 2 seed in the NCAA tournament.
But I don't know if they even made it to the Sweet 16 that year.
Yeah, I believe they did. That was your, I think that was your Larinaga was dancing.
That's right. Yep. Because that was funny. I love that's one of my, that's, well, one of my favorite things is the old guys in the locker room dancing and doing stuff like that.
I love Jim Larinaga so much. So let's see here. I'm looking up Miami here. So he's been at Miami since 11-12 season. They went, 12-13. They won the ACC and made the Sweet 16.
So one Sweet 16 in 6 years?
Two. They made the Sweet 16 15-16 as well.
Okay. Again, that's good success. I'm talking like that's just something to watch for because he's got some talent.
Yeah, I really like that Miami team as long as Lonnie Walker plays and is healthy. To me, that's kind of their X factor there with him and Bruce Brown. If you want to talk underrated players, Bryant Crawford from Wake Forest. I can't talk about him enough. Like, the dude can play. Vicini last year had a stat where he was one of the only, like, three players 2 years ago in the power conferences that put up certain stats. And it was him, Ben Simmons, and another, like, ridiculous top prospect. And it's just, he can do a little bit of everything. They lose John Collins this year,
Can he carry them into the tournament? Maybe.
Yeah, I think, and that's one thing I meant to ask Mike is, and I'll ask you this: how many tournament teams do you think the ACC have this year?
Well, I think Duke, ND, UNC, Miami, and Louisville. Those are five locks.
I think Virginia Tech is close.
Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, those are, I think.
So we're at eight?
Those are eight potential.
And then you're talking
about. And the rest, one of them would have to really, like,
probably
Georgia
one
Tech,
more gets in. Yeah, Georgia Tech maybe gets in or something like that.
Yeah, like, that would be the max.
Okay. I think that's kind of, I agree with that.
But I think those five locks, and then those three will be your bubble teams kind of all year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the ACC always gets like seven in. I think seven's the safe number.
Nine maximum.
If I set the over under at
seven and a half,
do you take the over or under?
I think I'd take the under.
I think I'd go over. Just because there's going to be so many chances for quality wins, I think.
Yeah, because
it's going to be one of those things where a team wins like two games in the last like 2 weeks where they play Duke at home.
Two top 20 teams.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's good. That's our ACC preview.
Yeah.
Again, thanks to Mike for coming on. He was awesome.
Super good.
Anything else before we go? I mean, obviously follow us at Fundamentally SD.
We're in the month now. We have a live show this month, man.
We do. It is October.
October 27th.
Shitty start to October with the news.
Yeah, we hope. Obviously, we are in no way serious, and hope that, you know, this shit sucks. Like, there's no way to put it. Like, it's emotional. Like, I know Clem put out a tweet today. Like, I fucking cried at this, and you should be like, don't be afraid to admit you did too. And it's like, yeah, I was watching the nightly news tonight, like the national thing. It's the first time I really sat down and watched it. And it's just like, I can't even put into words how like scary and upset and sad everything is, and I hope like this is just a, if you need a break, I hope we're able to provide just an hour break of bullshitting the college basketball. And all seriousness, if you just need a break and just want to talk college basketball or basketball, DM me, tweet at us, tweet at me. I don't care. Like, I mean, I need an escape today, so I was just doing shit like that. If you need an escape, feel free to reach out like that.
It's a good way to put it. And then anything else on the front? Yeah, like we said, October 27th.
Yep. 6:30.
First live show, Queen City Exchange.
Our guy Rick Browering, who covers Xavier pretty in-depth. We're going to do a Big East preview with him live at the show while we have Ben's mug up on the big screen. Since you will be in Wisconsin, we're Skyping in that one, obviously, with it being a Friday night. And then,
next week, what do we got? Which preview? Because we got all messed up.
So there's a potential next week of a guest.
We should go.
We should probably go two. Well, we might have to go two. But we're waiting confirmation to setting it up that Fran Fraschilla will be on next week.
Okay.
So that'd be a Big 12 preview with Fran. I'm currently talking to him, trying to set up a date and everything like that. But we'll tweet it out. We might do two next week. We're going to start getting in the rhythm, I think, of maybe doing two episodes a week. We've talked about it before. Once the season hits, we're definitely going to two episodes a week. Just because college basketball, you can't really just do one episode a week. There's too much going on. And the plan going forward once season starts is really to plan on doing set dates. So tweet at us what if you agree with us, but our preliminary plan is to record on Sundays and Thursdays to where, you know, it'll be out Sunday nights and Thursday nights, so you have the weekend covered and the weekday covered. Again, let us know what you kind of think of that. We may put it out on Twitter too, but that's the preliminary plan once the season starts. We may start doing two episodes a week just to get in the rhythm of it. And obviously we have a lot to cover because it seems like news is breaking left and right now that we're getting closer to the season.
It's probably not going to stop.
No. So follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at FundamentalESD. Shout out Tommy, who does all of our editing, and really we're extremely thankful for him. He busts his ass to get the episodes back to us and get it up on SoundCloud and iTunes and all that stuff. Shout out Matt, who does our social. He was putting out some pretty cool videos where he was at Rutgers Midnight Madness for the dunk contest. You can check them out on Twitter. We got a bunch of stuff coming up, man. I'm so excited it's October because it's basketball season.
Practice has started. I mean, we're rocking and rolling.
Yeah, fuck pumpkins, fuck Hocus Pocus. It's basketball season.
It's a good way to end, right?